More than 133 million Americans live with chronic illness, and most people have no idea what that life actually looks like. We're speaking to the founder of Chronica, Nitika Chopra, to tell us all about it today on Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. My name is Evan Rosenblum, along with the co-founders of Clean Logic and the Inspiration Foundation, Isaac Shapiro and Mike Gesser. What's up, fellas?
What's up, hey, Evan.
Did you know that there are more than 100 million Americans that are dealing with chronic illness in this country? It is a big problem. And today's guest is somebody who knows a lot about that and has taken it into her own hands to advocate for those people and to help all those afflicted live better lives and figure out ways to treat this and you know, I don't want to say treat it and deal with it because it's much more complicated than that, but it's a tough situation. And our next guest, you've probably seen her on QVC, where she's been a big, big star. And she's also created a bunch of companies that deal with this specifically, Chronicon. Nitika Chopra joins us right now. Nitika, thank you so much for joining us on Driven by Purpose.
Thanks, Evan. That was such a great intro. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us on the show. Chronic illness. We were just talking before the show about how all of us here are heavily involved in the disability community. My daughter has a cerebral palsy as she's 10 years old, and we deal with families with all kinds of disabilities. And I know from personal interactions that chronic illness is something that sucks. I wish there was a better word to describe it, but people that I know that are afflicted by it, it is a big problem, and it is something that I'm trying to think of the right words, but it's not taken as almost seriously or appreciated for as serious of a condition as it is. When you hear somebody say, oh, cerebral palsy or some of these other conditions, people are like, oh, that's, and they, mm-hmm. there's an air of seriousness that comes along with that. But when somebody says chronic illness, they're like, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's an issue that people in the chronic illness community deal with?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Everything you just said resonates deeply with me. That's why I started my company. That's why I started talking about my chronic illness journey, because I was diagnosed with my first autoimmune condition when I was 10, and I had psoriasis. But even that, people hear psoriasis and they're like, oh, it's just a skin disease. Like, you have some annoying patches of flaky skin. It's not that big of a deal. But I had psoriasis covering 98% of my body. It covered my body from the tip of my foot to the tip of my head for about 17 years. And it had it be almost impossible for me to move, to wear normal clothing, to just interact socially. It impacted me emotionally. I mean, it went so much deeper than skin, you know?
Yeah, and so people don't think about this stuff.
Your entire
man.
Life. They don't understand.
Yeah, that's
life.
Right. They're just like, oh, whatever. But they don't understand the layers.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yes.
Go ahead.
And can I just say one thing? No, this is new for me. We all hear the term, you know, we're in health and beauty aids. We work with pharma. So please go deeper if you want, because this is something, like you said, it's a very broad term, but even just hearing this, I'm like, oh, my daughter who's two is having skin things. So how do you even start to identify? Because it sounds like there's signs that could happen early that maybe we don't see. So this is new. So please get as deep as you want. This is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have no problem going to the depths of things. So that's not a problem.
We like the depths too.
So. Yeah, right. I mean, it's so boring on the surface. So I'm super down with that. But, you know, I started talking about it because of that, because I felt like I was walking around and like I'd go to a party or I'd hang out with people. And it just seemed like I was the only person who was having this experience. And I know, Evan, you mentioned that there are 100 million people that have chronic illnesses in this country, but it's actually more than 133 million.
Wow.
Americans.
Wow.
And that's kind of an old number. It was like pre-pandemic. So I'm sure the number has been even, you know, more, it has been added to even more since then, of course, even with long COVID and just people focusing health in different ways. But yeah, I just always felt like I was the only person. And then you hear a stat like that, and I started sort of going to a party and being like, so I'm a chronic illness advocate. Like, I don't even really know what that means right now, but this is what I'm doing. Does anyone else resonate with this? And then all of a sudden you'd hear someone say like, oh my God, my mom has MS and I've been, you know, taking care of her on her journey. Or yeah, I actually have endometriosis and it's been so challenging to date. Or I have chronic migraines and this is a problem that I've had for so long. It's been really hard to get, it's been really hard to get through school. You know, so you don't think of all of these different things. And I totally agree that people sort of like push it to the side. Like, right. What is illness? And I think even growing up, you know, kind of in the self-help industry, I felt like a lot of people were constantly saying things like it's in your head or you manifested this or you can just kind of think your way out of it. And there's nuance to positive thinking, to, you know, neural pathways and how those things can affect you and have an impact on your body. But it's not so black and white to someone saying, say this affirmation and then all of a sudden you'll wake up and my skin will be clear. And my joints will be better and things like that. So, yeah, I'm so passionate about this particular aspect of the conversation.
Well, and I think one thing, can I say one thing that you just listed? Again, I'm learning and it's like, my wife has migraines. And actually, early in our career, when we had some employees, they'd be like, oh my God, I need to take the day. And Mike and I'd be like, God, what is wrong? Like, take the whole day like this. It wasn't until I got married. I've probably had maybe 10 headaches in my life. And they're all probably from football when I played. So it's when I had to learn this migraine thing. But I would say in the last 5 to 10 years, especially with my wife being it, hearing stories of other husbands that their wives had to quit their job. So I didn't even know migraine fall again. So this is such a thing that is new to me.
I mean, having a debilitating headache it's debilitating. Like you literally, if you think about those times, I tell this to like my brother and my dad all the time because they haven't dealt with this stuff as much. And I'm like, you just got a cold for 4 days and you wanted to cry. And at one point you were like, someone needs to call 911, which was not actually needed because you just felt so terrible. And I'm like, imagine feeling that in almost every part of your body. And then people are looking at you like, what's wrong with you? Like, why didn't you like do that presentation yet? Like, why didn't you, you know, figure this whole thing out? Why didn't you pick the kids up from school or whatever it might be? So it's so, so nuanced and everybody's experience is so different. I think, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but I think acknowledging all of what we're saying is such a big part of the conversation. And I think we've been doing a much better job. There's so many more advocates out there. There's so many more organizations. There's podcasts like this. You know, people are starting to talk about it. But I think what I'm increasingly more and more passionate about is talking to people about it's kind of a two-step process. Like, let's acknowledge that we have this going on. Let's create a circle of care, of trust, of, you know, really nourishment and getting your needs met in your life. And then I want you to start thinking about really taking your power back from the illness that you're navigating and figuring out how do you look at your life and say, I know the pain is real. I'm never going to tell you that the pain is not real because that would be harmful. And then what else can we say is real? I say it like widening the aperture, you know, just a little bit. So if your narrow focus is on, I'm in so much pain, which I have so been there the first half of my 20s, my psoriatic arthritis, which I was also diagnosed with, made me almost bedridden for that first 5 years of my 20s. And I felt severely in pain every second of every day. So we're not talking about, you know, pretending like that's not happening. That's not going to help anyone. But once we acknowledge that and once we honor that and own that and create the circle around you that allows you to really feel supported in that part of the journey, I want you to start figuring out what else is real. If the pain is real, what else can we see that's real in your life? So that's what I'm increasingly more and more passionate about.
What are some of the examples of the things that pop up for what else is real, right? So if you could kind of get into that, help me understand a little bit.
Yeah, that's such a good question. So what I mean by that is, so from a physiological level, we all have a nervous system running so many of the processes that are happening in our body. So what happens when we go into a fight or flight state, which when we're in pain, I would say you can assume that you are in fight or flight. The amount of pain that you are feeling, if it is really altering your thoughts and altering your lived experience, I can't think of a time when I was in severe pain that I wasn't also in fight or flight. What that does is, if you think of the nervous system from a place of it's there to protect you, like that is its wisdom, that is its job, it becomes very narrow focused on the thing that is happening that is putting it in fight or flight. So for a funny example, you know, or for an example that we might not experience, if you're being chased by a bear, you know, people say, okay, well, then you're not thinking about your grocery list. You're thinking about how the heck do I get away from this bear? Like, this is the only thing on your mind. So I like to think of that with chronic illness. So when you're having this pain flare, you're having this experience, your narrow focus is meant to be on how do I get to the other side of this pain moment? But what happens is that in order to shift yourself into a more parasympathetic state and to start to decrease the volume on the fight or flight experience, you want to look at you want to have nuance, right? So if fight or flight is one way and it's only narrow view, you want to have nuance. So that's what I mean from a physiological level when I say there's more. What that looks like in real life, you know, when I was laying in my bed and I was really unable to do anything, I really couldn't work and I couldn't go meet a friend for coffee, because sometimes people will say, just go meet your friend for coffee. That's, you know, a simple thing. But someone who can't get up, that's not actually a simple thing. I would call people. I'm a big phone person even to this day. I would call a friend and I'd start to actually focus on their life a little bit, even if I'm in so much pain and I'm freaking out. It actually helped me. Like they say, if you're feeling helpless, go help someone. It actually starts to shift my focus, again, from that narrow focus to something else, right? And then I would also do things like create hobbies. Like I'm a very creative person. So sometimes just sitting down and writing out ideas that I have, writing out stories that I want to tell, writing out different things that I want to experience. Even if I'm not traveling at the moment, I sometimes will make lists of like places that I want to go, like, and save things on Pinterest. It's really about just whatever it means for you to get out of that narrow focus and do it in a way that's not going to put yourself into more fight or flight, where you're pushing yourself so out of your physical comfort zone that you start to experience increased pain or increased symptoms.
Right.
Does that help paint a little bit?
Yeah.
I've got a question for you.
No, go ahead, Isaac, please.
Isaac, you mentioned something earlier in this conversation about, you know, you would sometimes hear from employees who had to take a day off, you know, I had a headache, I got to take it off. So I guess that leads into my next question for you, Nitika, is if you, you know, people listening to the show are business leaders, you know, managers, stuff like that. If you could talk to them right now and give advice on handling, managing employees who suffer or are diagnosed with chronic illness, what are some of the issues that you hear with or that you deal with and that you wish you could kind of help explain to managers and people in a managerial position where you think that they could use some help in terms of,
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. I think like most challenges, it's always better to go in with a set of guidelines. So as you're building your company and as you're starting to figure out what do you want your company culture to be, how do you want your employees to feel? I personally have always had a set of guidelines that then allows the person who's at the company to feel a sense of empowerment. They know that I can take care of myself within these guidelines. So something like that could be, you know, the amount of times people can have a day off, the amount of ways that they can work from home if they're having some, you know, they need to work virtually, knowing the team that they can count on, that they can really tell, like, hey, I'm having a mental health day or I'm having a day where I'm having a bad flare. Just creating that understanding and setting them up for success from day one. Because I think what ends up happening a lot of times is that those guidelines are not in place and they sort of fly by the seat of their pants and hope that someone will, like, everyone will be okay. And then when someone's not okay, it's like, oh, supposed to do. Like, this is a disaster.
Right.
And then there's so much pressure on the person who's going through the hard physical thing because they're just, they can't even think straight.
Right.
So I personally, I like to be prepared. So I think it actually really serves people. And it doesn't mean that if you make a list of 10 guidelines that you're not going to learn on the job and say, hey, I had no idea that this was going to be an accommodation I was going to have to make. But that's also another piece that I would say is like, be a person that they can have that transparent conversation with. Like if someone comes to you and says, hey, I know there's these 10 guidelines, my condition actually goes beyond this. Like, can we talk about it? You know, and can we talk about what it would look like if I'm having a flare day? And I know there's so many challenges like with HIPAA and HR and all these different things. I know it's not, I'm self-employed. So it's a very different conversation than some of these larger corporations that really have to be mindful about security and privacy and all those things. But within what you're able to do, I think at least start to be open. And especially if you're someone going into a job, I would say there's so much fear around job security. And I understand that, like you maybe don't want to give too much information away. But I personally start to look at like, who are my safety people here? Like, who's the person that I know if I'm really having a flare, I can tell this person.
Right.
And I can calmly ask, like, what do I do? Like, how should I navigate this? Right. It might not be 10 people. It might be one person. But like starting to have that sort of game plan as a business owner and as an employee, I think just puts the empowerment back in your own seat versus waiting to react to something.
Now, I have a question that might, for both, I think, great question, Evan. So I look at some of the things that we've talked with other guests. It's, you know, like what I'm hearing a little bit is like, you have to be comfortable with yourself. Like when you switched up the conversation and went to parties, you're like, I'm an advocate. So it's the same thing when you go on the job, you have to have the right trust. You know, we've had conversations about building trust of the employer and the employee. And you know, one thing that I've learned a little bit, especially we're big in the mental health, because 1 in 4 Americans that has a disability is mental health, but it's almost like when we're talking about chronic illness, like we don't know what that defines in mental health. There's so much that goes into that. So how much does therapy work? Because even we've had people with disabilities, like Dr. Kirk Adams, he's been blind since age 5. He didn't get therapy into his adulthood because he was taught, just fight it. So if I'm thinking like, you know, chronic illness, you're just taught to hide it. Is there a thing that you see with, you know, therapy, building confidence? Because I think when you have confidence with, you know, your chronic illness and you have that confidence to go to your employer, so there isn't that fear. Is there anything around you talk around that? Because like, I feel like there's got to be a win-win, especially as we're defining chronic illness and migraines. Again, didn't know that fell under that. So do you have anything around how building your mental health or therapy can really help with what we're talking about here?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because I think so much of this journey that we're having with ourselves while we are navigating chronic illness is about self-love and self-trust. And I feel like people are so tired of hearing people talk about self-love because it feels so basic, you know, it feels like so just one-dimensional and so surface. But I personally do not feel that way about self-love. I think it is one of the most important parts of this journey. And I, you know, several years ago kind of created my own definition for self-love because I felt like people were just talking about it like it was this green juice I was supposed to drink or this downward dog. And I was like, this is not it. Like, first of all, I can't even do the downward dog. Second of all, I'm like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, this is not working. So I always say that self-love is about being more committed to your happiness than to your suffering in every single moment.
I love that. Right.
And some people, the reason why I say that is because I'm constantly wanting people to bring the empowerment back to themselves. It's actually not about the thing that I do. It's about my commitment to myself.
100%.
And when I was lying in bed and I was, you know, my skin was flaking and I was getting bullied at school and all these things, I kept abandoning myself, right? I kept saying, I don't want to be this way. I don't want to be like this. I wish this wasn't happening. And that is so human and so normal. I have so much compassion for that version of me. And my journey has had to be about, how do I keep going back to, okay, this is what's real right now, but what else is real? Sure, yeah. I have this condition, but I'm also a great friend. I'm also really smart. I'm also whatever things we want to list about ourselves, right? But that journey of learning that about yourself is such a huge part of it. And I think, Isaac, your question is so great because, you know, it is about having that love and confidence in yourself enough to be able to be vulnerable and say to somebody like, hey, this is not ideal for me either. Like, how can we figure this out together? And I'm really committed to being here, and I'm really committed to doing a great job. And this is what's up. You know, that does take a level of comfort with oneself.
Yep. Yeah, 100%.
Also on the employer side, you need to create that safety in the organization so that someone can do that and come up to you and be able to share that with them. I think to me, that's extremely important, especially being an employer, to be able to have somebody come and tell me how they're feeling, whatever it may be, or what their needs are.
Nitika, can you tell people, I'm sure you're well-versed on the resources available for people out there who suffer from chronic illness. Do you mind listing some of the better places that you would recommend people call if they're having issues with chronic illness, some places that you recommend people could reach out to?
Sure. I mean, I personally, and this is probably not going to be what you think I would say, but I personally, let's see. But I personally, you know, work through not over-identifying with my illness all the time, but knowing that I'm having this experience, right? That is something that I work through. And what has helped me is I've actually read like a lot of memoirs in my life of people who have gone through really challenging things. It's not necessarily even illness related. Sometimes it's things that have nothing to do with illness, but I'll read them and I'll be like, this sounds terrible. Like, how the heck is this person going to get out of this? This is so genuinely so hard. And they're really at the end of their rope. And it just feels like this isn't going to get better. And then I see how a real life person like really worked with themselves and figured out a way to the other side. And personally, I love audiobooks. So I listen to those kinds of things like in between when I'm doing stuff or getting ready in the morning. And it just really helps calm my mind a bit. And it helps me take myself out of like a spiral, especially if I'm in that. And then I also think, you know, for those who are really navigating just the nuts and bolts and their lived experience of their disease, there are so many powerful disease groups. So like if you have myasthenia gravis or cerebral palsy or you have psoriasis, each condition has often their own foundation. And there's so many support groups that are condition specific, which I think can be super, super helpful. And then the third thing I would say is, find people who have lived this experience that are doing the like living their life in a way that feels empowering to you. So for someone, it might be like they just want someone to show them how to go to the doctor and not have a panic attack. And that's like what they need to feel, you know. For someone else, they might be like, I want to know how to be an entrepreneur and also navigate my health, right? But finding those people, I think, is really important.
Now, the chronic illness, like I said, we've been learning so much about it. We haven't even learned, well, you had all this pain. How the heck did you find this purpose and energy to start a business and do this coaching? Because I want to make sure we get this.
Great question.
Teaching us so much already that we're like, wait, I want to know what she does and why she's so purpose-driven, was able to take this. Tell us a little bit how you've got this pain in your 20s. When did you start the business? And how did you even get that? If we are talking about a lot of this thought process that you had to shift and move, because you sound very knowledgeable and that's where you're at. So talk to us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, it was a really big turning point for me in my mid-20s. I was, I've always been a singer my whole life. I took voice lessons for many years. And I had this moment where my voice teacher called me and said, you know, you should go audition for this thing because we've been practicing it. And there's like an open call. And I was 25 years old and I was living in the West Village in New York City and I couldn't get out of bed. And it makes me like emotional to think about, but I really wasn't living life. You know, I had no idea how to, I knew these thoughts were like better thoughts, more, you know, was possible, but I had no physical idea how that was going to happen. And so I had this moment where I saw, I kind of became the observer of what was happening for a moment, you know, versus feeling like it's all happening to me. I was like, there's something going on here. I'm not able to get out of bed. I'm 25 years old. Like, I need to figure something out. So I ended up taking a medicine that actually really helped me. And I say that really candidly because I think people get the wrong idea about getting medical help. And it was the thing that allowed me to calm my system down enough to start reprogramming my system. And when I was in such a negative state, such a physical state of pain and turmoil, I could not think enough positive thoughts to like change my situation. So I ended up taking medicine that really helped. And then I started to work on my emotional aspects of myself and my emotional life. I got into therapy. I more recently in the last couple of years have started working with the nervous system coach. I've done everything from EMDR to hypnosis. Wow. I mean, there's just like, I've tried it all. I've read a lot of books. But it was really, honestly, that turning point of, even though it was the medicine that helped me get out of bed, I also had to be like, I'm going to choose some help, right? Because up until that point, I had been putting a lot of pressure on myself to figure it out without medicine and feeling like I needed to figure it out because the secret had told me that if I just thought these things, like genuinely so many people, you know, are told like, you should just be able to like, it's all in your head.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Manifest it.
Manifest it. And I was sitting there. I was 20, 25, 23. My parents were living in Hong Kong. I was all alone. And I was just like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong all the time. So the medicine was really a huge turning point, but it just gave me life. It gave me the ability to say, like, now what do I actually want to do? And then I had to work layer by layer by layer by layer. And I've been at points in my life where I've had to take like 13 pills a day because my health has been so bad. And now I'm on one medicine every other month. And it's like not the same, right? So there's different nuances there. But I'm really passionate, honestly, about talking about that aspect because I feel like so many people are so all or nothing about it. And they almost demonize, you know, getting that help. But it puts your body in a fight or flight state to be in so much pain.
Yeah.
And so if you can get something to help you, then you can start to look at what else is there. What else is going on beyond the pain? Otherwise, all you can do is feel the pain.
Well, and also it's important that more people talk about it openly and take the, you know, the what's the word I'm looking for? Like the taboo away from it, right? That, you know, they normalize it. And so you can have these open conversations without feeling any kind of shame or anything like that around it. So, because that's the thing, if you treat it like it's a bad thing or shameful, you're never going to get to really the root cause of it and be able to kind of address it and fix it and get better. And so the more that we kind of normalize these conversations, the closer we'll get to actually helping people, you know, deal with it and find a solution and grow and get better and be able to accomplish what they want. And it'll stop hindering them from doing things in their lives that they want to do, whether it's go to work or, have more of an involvement with their family, whatever it is they're trying to do that the illness is preventing them from doing. So thank you for being such an outspoken advocate and for being so, for living your life and being transparent about it and open. I think it takes a brave person to do that. And we appreciate that. And thank you. It's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And one thing I just want to add to the last part is, you know, the conversation around medicine is meant to be a gateway for you to be able to do the work that you need to do internally. Right. And so I just want to underscore that it's not meant to be a crutch, but it's also not meant to be like evil, which I think people say a lot. Yeah. Well, so thank you so
just
much.
Just to finish out here, as I know we're ending here, what would you say your goal with your knowledge and your business around this? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to put out there to give advice to the 133 million, not 100 million?
Yeah.
I want to, because like I said, this is all new and like pieces that I think we're trying to describe to people that has been taboo to talk about. What are you trying to accomplish with the mission? As we close out here to learn, about a lot of your lived experience and how you're really trying to get it out there and change the life for 133 million people.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm the most passionate about is giving people the tools to look at their experience differently. So you'd be surprised how much that change of focus can actually change your entire life experience. And what we talked about earlier, you know, just focusing on the first time I created Chronicon, I mean, I'm so proud of what we've done so far, but it was really a place where I was like, oh, I have a chronic illness and you have a chronic illness. We should just like have chronic illnesses together. and that's
hey, power that, of numbers, right?
Yeah, and you know what? There wasn't anything like that at the time. No one right, was doing right. that. I was like, that was a big deal. That Absolutely. Was genuinely a big deal, right? But now I'm like, okay, so we have chronic illnesses together. I want us to actually know, again, what else is possible. And people get really triggered. I know I used to around the word healing, because I think it's always been sort of co-opted as this conversation of like, it has to look one way. Healing, you know, has to happen in a very specific way. I personally think we need to take back the word a little bit and say that, like, it's not even about, you know, once you are in a state of healing, that maybe you still have some symptoms. That's not even what this is about. It's not about perfection, right? But there is a disconnect and often a heartbreak and often an over-identification, often feeling othered and separated from a very young age, which tends to then spill out into people's lives. I know it did for me. That part we can start to heal. That part we can start to look at differently. And then your life, it has a ripple effect. You know, how you actually create your relationships, how you follow your dreams, how you treat yourself. Things like that start to look different. And I see it in the Chronicon community, but I also see it with my private clients that I work with one-on-one. They start to see that they are so much more than their illness, but that their illness has actually been their greatest tool for connection and for getting their needs met throughout their life. And I really get that. You know, I remember fighting with my mom as a kid and being like, I'm itching and like, you can't yell at me. Like, I need, you know, I need to stop. And just feeling like there was always this bartering system happening because I really wanted connection and I really wanted care. And finding ways to do that are genuine and connected to who you are and your essence versus connected to your illness, I think is what we're meant to be doing next.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nitika Chopra, thank you so much for joining us on the show. This was very enlightening. I know that Isaac and myself and Mike learned a lot.
Absolutely.
Tell people how to find you and follow you and learn more.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. And you can follow me at Nitika Chopra and at Chronicon Official.
Amazing. Great. Thank you. Remember, if you like, want to support, tell a friend, like, follow, subscribe, comment, do all the stuff. And we'll see you next time on Driven by Purpose. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nitika.